This is the Empower Podcast, released April 10th, 2022, episode 585, Return of the Trade Show Jedi.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
What's up, nerd?
I'm on a deadline.
Yes, you're on a deadline.
60 minutes timer is starting. So this is a true Amp Hour.
Yep.
And our editor said, hey, can you maybe do a couple shows that are like an hour? And I was like, yeah, I think our next one will be. So
right. Okay.
The last one was an hour 45 with Paul. I think it was an hour and a half. So yeah,
we've been sneaking up there. Longer with the power stuff because we were just
And we were so excited.
I know.
This stuff is good stuff, people.
Have you checked the number of views on that one? I haven't looked at the stats yet.
No, I don't either. So, yeah,
have to see.
Should probably do that at some point.
Yep.
I mean, we're here for us. Let's be honest. We're here for us. There's a couple of people that listen. We love all of you. Thank you for doing that. You know, we're here for you. But you know, if there are not throngs of you waiting in the wings, well, we're still doing the same old thing. You know, 11 years strong. So
right. So you've got a meeting after this. You've got like virtual again.
Yeah, virtual everything. A meeting, but it's someone in around your time zone, so it's just how it all lines up.
Yep. Right.
What's new? What you been? Oh, you were just at electronics.
Electronics. The trade shows are open again. The world is back to normal. And
quote unquote normal is the best we can do here.
It was pretty normal. It was the general consensus was, I'm so over this crap. Uh-huh. Yeah, yep. Never again was the consensus. Yep. Yeah, no, nah, this lockdown rubbish. Nope, never again. Mm-hmm. So everyone was happy to be back. So that was really fun.
So, and looking at your videos, you are in the top, one of the top things that comes up for electronics on YouTube, at least.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Was your last time there 2015 or previous?
No, I would have done it in 2019, I think, maybe. Or didn't I go then? Know. Oh, I might have been in Melbourne and I didn't go.
Oh my gosh. You have a video with Sagan being there in 2012. That's adorable. Yeah.
I think I might have had a stand then. That might have been the year I had a stand at the show.
I remember that. Yeah.
I had a stand for 2 years. It was like
All right.
So
anything different? I mean, like, it's not the biggest trade show in the world, which is
No, it's pretty small,
Is it the same people over and over again? So it's like catching up with old friends, or is it like
It's pretty much, there's not there's a few new ones I haven't seen before and stuff, but no, it's pretty much catching up with, everyone every year. That's pretty much what it's for. Like that's
true,
its
true.
Job.
Yeah.
You know, it's like to maybe to, like to meet like salespeople you've been talking to, or engineering staff at the company you've been dealing with just on the phone or email or something like that. It's just or to just meet old contacts. And I think it's for them to talk to each other as well, much customers. Yeah, totally. It's for them to get together and hey, how's business going?
As I started going to trade shows and then started becoming part of trade shows, and then now I'm still going to trade shows, and it's like, it really is about setting up meetings and just like having a slate of meetings. And I just remember the first time someone was like, I'm in meetings all day at this conference. I was like, aren't you going to get to go see all the stuff? Like,
the show?
the fun part, And they're like, no, that's actually, I'm here to do work. I was like, right. Oh, yeah. Okay. I think the real thing there, how they talk about if you're not paying for something, you are the product. I think before I was the product, and then now I am more in the buyer sphere of that. Right. Buy the product, which is attention of engineers and such like that. So
exactly.
It's growing up is hard, Dave.
I know. Yep. Got a kid and everything. Wow.
I know. Yeah. I don't think my daughter will be coming at any trade shows with me, but I do have the two that I mentioned. I will be going to, and I want to hear more about electronics, of course, but I will be at Zephyr Developer Summit, which is in June. I'll actually be giving a talk and a presentation, with my coworker.
That's
Mike.
Only for Zephyr aficionados.
Some right? people that are like, there is it? The is it just getting started.
Well, given that Zephyr's in the name, I would imagine that it's a.
Yeah, you'd think that. I'll be honest. The content on the second and third day, the first day is supposed to be for people like kind of getting started. And that's when I'm really giving talks for people that are kind of getting into it in a workshop. You know, you'll meet people and you'll learn interesting things, but it gets pretty deep pretty fast. So I'm kind of hoping to help influence this in future years where it's like, think about the users, you know, where's the Zephyr user conference? Because like, I'm never going to be I think that's what they mean by Zephyr developer, but really it's like, a lot of the people that are developing the core software that other, you know, open source software. And I'm like, man, that's, it's right. never, ever going to be me. So,
yep.
Anyways, that, and then I'll be in Germany at the end of June, Embedded World. And that's in Nuremberg. And so,
that is the biggie. That's the biggest in the world, isn't it? For our industry, I think. Is that
I'd say Electronica is bigger. That is actually this year.
Yes.
In November.
Right. I was confusing in Munich. The two. Yep.
Yeah.
Once again, in Germany, everything.
In Germany, yeah. So they're about an hour apart from one another. Yeah. All right. So I don't know if I'll be going to that one, but this one is Embedded World's a little bit more targeted. You know, Electronica is like, it's closer to like CES, in my opinion. I went back in 2014, I think. And it was like, oh, it was big. So I'm sure that we had shows back then, but yeah. Yeah. So electronics, let's get back to that.
What, the show?
Yeah, I mean, like what you saw, I posted your test stand video. I thought that was great.
Yes, the test equipment video. We can talk about that later. We can talk about test jigs and stuff like that.
Test jigs, yep.
Like I haven't done my main video yet. I'm going to edit that today, which is, you know, like the main walk around with like, you know, having a look at stands and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just so much manufacturing. Like it's almost a mini manufacturing show, you know, there were like half of the companies there were either a contract manufacturer, they were selling they were selling machines to manufacture, you know, they were selling pick and place machines, selective soldering machines. There were three stands that had selective soldering machines or inspection. And, you know, for production type stuff, there's stuff for production drills and things like that. You know, a company that specialized in like these drills, if you've ever worked on a production line and like you have these drills. Like,
oh, you're talking about like the torque control ones that like come down from the ceiling.
Torque control ones that hang down from the ceiling. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. It's just, it was like half manufacturing stuff.
Is there a push in Australia right now to bring more manufacturing back? I mean, you guys have some, but not.
That's kind of the vibe. And I spoke to quite a few people who said, "Oh yeah, you should come visit our company. Your country, we've got our country, our company. We've got pick and place machines and everything. Like it's like every tin pot company seems to have their own in house manufacturing." Now, so yeah, it seems to be a thing.
None of them have parts.
Right, no one has parts, but you know, but everyone's doing their manufacturing in the house because they realize the value of it. Yeah. You know, sure, you have to put some capital investment and then some labor investment into, you know, training people to use the machines and stuff like that. But once you do that, yeah, you can get some really excellent in-house manufacturing and all the advantages that comes with that in terms of, you know, being able to control the process and fix anything immediately and things like that. So it's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great push. I actually, you know, I'm all for that. I think that localization of manufacturing, especially when like, you know, what is the, so like if the costs are creeping up other places because of currency or, you know, just all the world stuff that we talk about on here, if that is the case, and it's like, if you're going to be at someone else's mercy, maybe it is worth it to bring that stuff in-house. You know, there's a lot of hassle there, of course, but you know, some of that upfront investment could pay off in tight times, assuming you can get parts.
Exactly.
Interesting.
No, yeah, it was great.
That's a great move. And like, I think even just from a selfish, like, oh, well, Dave might get to go to more places and film things. And, you know, like that benefits all of us. So that's great.
Exactly. So, yes, I had quite a few offers to, you know, actually go to companies and shoot their manufacturing facilities and stuff like that. So,
That's
so
great.
Subscribe to my EEV Discover channel.
Oh, okay. All right.
Which is where that stuff will probably be, I think.
Okay. Cool.
Now that all this COVID crap's over with, you know, I can get back to actually go to places and film stuff again. It's great.
Yeah. So how did that feel? Was it like weird? I don't know how social you've been otherwise, but was it good to be like back out among the people?
No, that's probably like, that's the first like major thing I've been to actually since, you know, the whole COVID thing started. So yeah. How about you? Is that the first, you know?
I have been to, there's a group here in town called Riot, which I'm not sure if I mentioned, Raleigh IoT. So Raleigh is like the city about 20 miles away from here. So easily drivable. And they host a bunch of stuff. I went to a developer day there. And yeah, I mean, like I was jibber jabbering like a fool. Like I was just like
exactly.
So excited to talk to people about technology. Yep. And I'm just like, yeah, and then this and that and this and that. And they're like, who are you? I'm like, I'm new here. I'm extremely excited. And I've set up this meetup group, but I haven't scheduled one yet. So that's probably the next step.
Well, that's what, you know, a few people told me, when's the next major meetup? You know, am I going to schedule another meetup thing? And yeah, probably. So
great.
Yep. Yeah. So it's all happening, but it really felt good to be back out there, you know, doing stuff. And, you know, so yeah, my first major event and I want to do more again, but we don't have much here. So I don't know. I have to go visit companies and stuff like that.
That's a good start, right? Yeah. You gotta go dig for the deep stories, you know, that's good.
Yep. Anyway, speaking of the manufacturing, yes, the test jigs. Custom test jig. Yeah. So we'll link in the video down below. And for those who don't know, if you've never worked in a production environment where you have to test your boards, you know, because like, well, there's times when I've worked at companies where we haven't done this in-house, but we've made the test jigs and then we send them off to the manufacturer. I've actually done this myself. My microcurrent, right? I've designed these test jigs and then I ship the test jigs off to the manufacturing house, and the manufacturing house have just a little, they set aside like a little part of their manufacturing floor just to test your boards and stuff. If you're a large enough customer, you know, they'll like set aside like a whole, you know, section of their huge warehouse thing to, you know, set up your test jigs permanently. And then they'll test the boards as they come straight out of the oven. They'll, you know, whack them in your test boards, which is generally a pogo pin head of nails. It's like a bed of nails type thing that comes down, and there's many different ways to do it. There's like countless variations to do it. And anyway, you have to watch the video to see, you know, they had like a fairly complicated one there. It was a dedicated like a floor standing machine that had, I think, 470 pogo pins on the bottom. And then on the top, it actually had light pipes coming out. It had some probes on the top, I think. And then it had fiber optic light pipes coming out to test the LEDs on your board, because people don't realize, if your board has LEDs, somebody's got to test them. You've either got to test them using your eyeball.
Exactly. Yep.
You're either using the Mark One eyeball, which is not recommended because, you know, people can just get lazy and go, I think it was on. You know, or if you've got a whole bunch of LEDs, like you often can't tell if just one's off, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if you're supposed to have, there's 10 LEDs there and, you know, one's off. Like, it's often hard to tell. Mm-hmm. And it's slow as well, obviously, because you've got to have a human, then you've got to verify it. And, you know, it basically the rule of designing automated production test jig is if you can take the human out of the loop, do it. Right? You do not rely on user input to press a button and go pass, fail, because they'll just pass every time, even though it fails, because they don't want the hassle of, I don't know, dealing with the failed units or something, right? So yeah, you've got to have an automated, that's hence the reason you do an automated system, is so that not only can it generate a report, this board, it passed all these, you know, 300 tests here, but then you know it's done because, you know, it's completely automated. The user has no input apart from, you know, actually shoving the machine, you know, actually closing the lid on the thing. Like, you have to fit the board in there, you close the lid and you hit the button, and that's, you know, and then it goes through all its automated test suites and things. And then it spits out a report. Although I have had instance where they have actually faked it. They just use the same board over and over again. You know,
really?
Yes. And we wonder why all these boards were failing.
Was there not like, oh my God.
Well, because you always have a golden board there, right? What's called a golden board, which is your, you know, you either use that to, if you've got a system that learns, especially like, you know, if it's measuring the resistance of points on the board and stuff like that, like you'll have a golden board, known good board, and then that will be there, and they can often, and there's nothing to stop them taking that board and put it in and actually pretending that that one's a passed board. So
that's a reason not to use those like vinyl barcode stickers, because you can just scan the board that's quote unquote under test, and then just use the golden board. You need to read the UID from the chip. That's the important thing.
That's how we've done it in the past. We've actually designed in specific serial ID chips onto the board. So that its sole purpose is to track that board.
It's super useful. And a lot of micros do that by default now too. You just got to like read out a certain register.
There's some micros out there with laser individual serial numbers, isn't there? Like,
I'd say the majority of the ones that I see these days, like the not even secure, like I'd say just
really
any, like even like a 8051 board that I was using had it. Else? I mean, I think a lot of the Cortex M anything almost always has one in there. So
really, it's got an individual serial number.
Yeah, because they got to serialize stuff too, right? You think about like they need to be able to tell chip one from chip two when they're doing automated testing on their side. So I think they just carry that through.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Fair enough.
And a micro. I don't think, you know, like op amps less so, right? But like micro.
Oh, no. You can't do that. That's why you would put a dedicated serial number chip on the board. Yeah, and that's harder to, fake that. So, like, here's the test report. It's got the serial number on it. The serial number is on the board, and Bob's your uncle, right? So, And then often you would put because you can't read, like, because you can't visually see that serial number on the board. So you often print out, part of the manufacturing process will be to print out a serial number, you know, barcode label that matches the internal code of the chip or whatever. Yep. So, or you can program your automated test thing. Like if there's an E squared prom on the board, you can program the automated test thing to actually write the serial number to the board. And then, you know, it's blank or whatever. So you write it in there. There's an E squared prom somewhere, either it's built into your micro or it's somewhere else on your board. And you can individually. And then the test software just increments the serial number each time you do a new board. So,
Totally.
And then you can track that through the entire process. And although I was talking about in the video how when you've got, you know, hundreds of these pogo pins, right? Each pogo pin is, you know, tens or hundreds of grams of force, right?
Oh, yeah.
To actually put the thing down. So if you've got a couple of hundred pins, right, that's a lot of force on your board. And if you don't design these jigs properly, what I mentioned in the video is that you can crack your board. You can get component micro cracking, especially in multi-layer ceramic caps, of course. You know, I've done videos on
that. Where the metal hits the ceramic. Yeah, totally.
Yep. And you can get all sorts of issues, and it may pass, right? So your board goes into the test gear, you close the thing down, all your pogo pins come down, or you go onto all the test points, you run your automated test, and it works fine. And then when you lift the pins back off, that's actually, you know, the board flexes back, and that's what does the cracking. And then so you've just cracked your freshly test 100%, you know, totally tested board, and it's just, and it goes out and it's cracked, or it has a long-term failure mode, for example, that just fails in the field, or fails with temperature, or fails with stress, or only fails when you screw it into the product or something like that because of the mounting points. Or, you know, there's just, so you've got to design these things right. It's a real art form. So, tricky business. Anyway, fun stuff. Have a watch of the video. It wasn't that in depth. It's only 10 minutes long and just generally talking about that sort of stuff. But
yeah, it's good. I think it's for people that haven't, you know, if you haven't ever been in manufacturing before or seen it, it's a great overview. And those are some pretty, they look very expensive, to be honest. They look like
high-end. They're not cheap.
Not what I normally think of, that many pogo pins, that many tests, but they were also showcasing their capabilities.
Of course. And they weren't even that complex ones. You know, even the one I talked about with, you know, the 470 pins and the fiber optic light pipes going over to actually test the LEDs and stuff. Like that one was like, it's reasonably complicated, but that's not like a real high-end one. You know, they can get really complicated. As I said before, I've done like automated handling ones where you actually design an entire table-sized tester that actually manually handle, like you actually have the boards and you put them into these chutes things. So you load up these cartridges kind of things with all the boards, and then you put the cartridge, then you have all the cartridges there and you put them in to the machine, and then a little piston comes through and it shoves the board out, and then it moves it along the conveyor, not a conveyor belt, but like moves it along the rails kind of thing, and then automatically puts it under the head of nails tester, which then comes down with a hydraulic thing, comes down, probes it, runs its test, lifts it up, shoots the board out, and then puts it into a pass-fail bin, you know, a little flipper thing, which, you know, reject, and it goes off into the reject bin and stuff like that. So you can, you know, fully automate the handling, the physical handling of it too. So you would do that for really high volume stuff. Yeah. So
that's great.
Really cool stuff. So if you want to get into test engineering, it's not as boring as you think.
Oh, I don't know. You know, the one thing that actually did pop out of that video was when he's like, and here is Visual Studio Code. We still code in Visual Basic. It's like, oh yeah, that is the language of test jigs that I remember too. Testing stands.
And your problem is?
Oh, no thanks. Yeah, Visual Basic.
What?
And what was
what's wrong with Visual Basic?
Come on, Dave.
It's fine.
It's just old. It. Yeah.
So what's the actual problem with it? Nothing,
it's
right?
Clunky.
No.
The other one I wanted to complain about more was National Instruments. What's their stuff? LabVIEW. That's the other one.
LabVIEW.
Many test stands run LabVIEW.
Yes.
So you got to pay that tax and use that stuff.
the LabVIEW tax.
Yeah,
and
it's not cheap.
And that includes the tax to the LabVIEW specialist who only knows LabVIEW inside and out, you know.
And their hardware. I mean, and so they sell hardware now too, and their hardware is really, like, they make great hardware. They make test equipment effectively.
Oh, yeah, but it's super expensive.
Pixie form factor, but yeah, they're just raking it in. So
yeah.
You know, good for them. But
yeah, but it's really good stuff, right? You know, it's really
we were former competitors. So I think I feel negative, you know, feels.
Right.
I still carry that with me for some reason. You know, I carry all this weight with
the
me.
The hatred of the deep, of National Instruments.
Isn't it interesting how, like, I don't know if maybe you have that. I don't know, maybe if you're like, Mentor Graphics from your Altium days or, you know, whatever.
No, not really.
Yeah, no. I don't know. But I still have, just because, like, you hear these stories and you're like, oh, yeah, it's just another company trying to do their thing, you know? It's just like.
All right.
Yeah. Oh, well. I was asking on Twitter, actually, around trade shows. This is definitely a trade show. I was asking because I am in charge of making some demos and stuff. So I was curious about what makes for a good demo. And I thought I'd ask you here, what makes for a good trade show demo, a memorable one? I had asked on Twitter and a lot of people gave me very old examples, but some very interesting ones.
Okay. Well, they're interactive for a start. They've got to be, you know, you've got to be able to, like, do stuff with it.
Yep.
Like, you know, you've got to be able to, I don't know, send it an SMS message and, you know, text to this number and watch the magic happen. You know, I don't know, something like that. Right. So, lots of blinky lights, of course.
Blinky lights. I think that's good. I think depending on the, you know, if you have a screen,
It doesn't have to be active. Like in my video, you're going to see the Wago stand.
Mm-hmm.
They do industrial connectors, right? Wago, you know, pin, like, you know, the
expensive,
all sorts. They do everything. Oh yeah, Wago or like,
yeah, they're like
the
Phoenix
top.
And
Weidmuller. They're like Phoenix Contact. Right. So and their stand I thought was really impressive because it had like every single connector there up on the board, and you could see every single. You know, it wasn't away in a glass case, you know, like they hide it away in a glass, you know, it was on a nice beautiful board, and it had all these infographics as well. They had spent a lot of coin actually designing those infographic displays and stuff like that, and showed the real applications that they're used in.
That's true. And especially for connectors, I feel like it's such a, I mean, you know, we could go search on a distributor site all day long, but there is nothing like my favorite thing in the world, which I still miss, is when people would roll in the suitcase full of connectors and you just palm through it, you know? Definitely mentioned it on here before, but like,
totally.
So like, if you have to go to a trade show for that, that's great actually, but you know, so that's a good one.
Yeah, I hate when they're away, they're inside a glass case. It's like, ooh, look at all those mill connectors in there. Ooh, you know, but like, you can't touchy-feely.
Yeah.
You know, it's
too much cold. Too much cold.
Yep. Right.
They're actually just more worried these days that you're just going to take one for your project because people are, you know, so
right. Well, that's, the best freebie bowl was at the test stand.
I don't go for the freebies
that we talked about there. They had a bowl full of pogo pins.
Okay, that's not bad.
Bowl full of pogo pins. That's pretty cool.
That's on point. Although truly on point because it's on sticking point. Your hand.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think about like I stopped and I thought about like, so I just asked, like I said, because I'm trying to make some memorable demos, and I literally couldn't not remember a single demo
right
that I'd been at. And it's like, oh, maybe just none of them are, and you just have to do the best you can and like try and start conversations with it. But like, you know, some of the stuff people actually past guest of the show, I believe that's the same Mark. Yeah, same Mark. Past guest of the show said, back at ESC, or Embedded System Conference, TI was giving out dev kits, but only exchanged for other dev kits. They had to leave with STM. They left with a huge bin of STM32 dev kits that ST was handing out. So people came and traded then the STM32 dev kits for a TI dev kit.
That was nice.
That's pretty good. Yeah,
that'd be great. Like a big sign that says, trade in your dodgy STM dev two TI kits, you know, or something like that.
Apparently it was no longer allowed after that, but bad. Okay. I got to say, you know, it's kind of e-waste, but...
How can it not be allowed? Screw that.
Because basically, I'm sure SD complained, and you know, they gave out this stuff.
Come on, well, suck it up. You come up with a better thing next time. No, all fair at the trade show, I reckon. That's bullshit. come on. No, and other ones like real high level applications, like I've seen, like they'll build like a racing simulator car thing, right? Yeah. So they'll be, you know, if you're into in industrial controls or something, you know, like you will build like a racing simulator, you know, so you can sit in the seat and then you could drive the car and the, you know, and the hydraulic-y things move and, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All that sort of stuff. They're really cool. You have people lining up to have a go at that.
I don't have budget for that, so no, yeah.
Right, okay.
A little bit more limited, but okay.
That draws them in.
Yeah,
I don't recommend the Altium route. So Altium. Yeah, have the bunny. Anyway, maybe that can be the photo for this episode.
Nope, bunny definitely at the
trade
not.
Show? No. Okay.
There's some older school sales methods that I don't particularly approve of. So anyways, it's tough. I think it's tough to figure out how to do this stuff, and you know, swag. I don't go for swag, but I don't know. Like, I'm doing it all from my perspective too, so it's also like what other people want, versus what I want. So I'm more in the, if I'm actually walking up to a trade show stand, I want to like quickly figure out what it's about. So that I'm not like sitting there like staring at it for 20 minutes, and then finally like someone walks up and like, oh, you have any questions? You're like, I don't know what you do. I'm sorry. What is it you say you do here?
Yeah. Right. Well, when I had my stand, right, I had a 3D printer, because kind of 3D printers were like still a kind of novel thing back then, you know, so I had a 3D printer. Actually,
probably not 2019 then, just as a callback to earlier, probably not 2019. Yes.
No, when I actually had a stand in 2012 or something, you know. So I would have a 3D printer there, just actually printing stuff, and people would just be standing around just watching the 3D printer, and I'd have three little, you know, you could actually take one of the 3D printed things, and I would be running. I set up headphones, like I had a multiple headphone amplifier, so you could put the headphones on and you could watch my videos, you know. So I had some choice videos there, and people could, you know, put the headphones on and, you know, stuff like that. Yeah,
that's good. Yeah, I mean, you're right. I think you're right. Like some level of interactivity, you know, really just, like I said, I think it's to really just promote questions and get people talking.
Right.
That's really the main thing. So,
although I've got to give props to the ones who just no F's given. their stand is completely empty, and it's one person.
2 meter table person, with a piece of white sheet, and they're just like, you better talk to me. You know you want to.
And there's two stools there, and that's it, right? That's then there's just a table with two stools. Or sometimes it's just a chair, right? It's just one chair in there. Like, it doesn't even have a guest chair.
I just think it's always like, did your stuff get lost in the mail? I mean, like, what is the thought here? I mean, I guess they're just trying to start conversation.
Well, no, they're just there to have meetings with clients. That's it. And you know, I guess I don't know, but yep. So,
I guess we're right back where we started in 2019, Dave, or whenever the trade shows cut off. I guess 2020 might have had trade shows, but I don't remember any of them.
No, I don't think there are any. We almost had it here. We almost actually both years we almost had it because it was in September. It's normally in September, the electronics trade show, and September in 2020 here, we were almost practically COVID free, I think, in September, and it was like and there was like one case or something, and then it like got cancelled or something. Yeah. There was like one case in all of Sydney or Melbourne or something, and it just and they cancelled it. So, and then almost the next year, I think like they had advertised a date and everything, and like they were, you know, you could register to attend, and then it was like, last minute cancellation, I think, like, you know, days before or something, or a week before. Yeah. So yeah, that was really annoying. Yep.
Back to it though. Yeah.
Not one toss given this year. It was like, yep, it's on. No, back to normal. Everyone's had enough. And and all the big stuff. Like I love watching, you know, people were telling me stories about how, you know, especially at the bigger trade show, like the really huge ones, like you're going to in Germany, how during pack up time, it's literally dangerous to be there because of the forklifts just going everywhere at full speed. And it's like they, you know, they were telling stories about how, you know, cars were getting forked, I guess, right? They're getting like complete, like forks straight through the side of a car because, you know, they're just running around like, you know.
There's Aussie Man videos about that, yeah.
Headless chickens. And it's just, it's just the mad scramble to pack up. It, you know.
Guess it's got to hit the pub, you know.
It's good fun. But yeah, it's especially difficult when you've got, you know, large pick and place machines and stuff like that, you know, to transport, you know, huge stuff. So, it's a big deal. Yeah, and then when I was at a trade show in the US, I was on the Altium stand. It's like, oh no, you can't do that. Labor workers only. Mm-hmm. You know, union workers only. You know, oh no, you can't plug that in. No, union worker has to be there to actually plug.
It's
unbelievable, unbelievable.
It's a very special situation and expensive.
Oh God, yep. Yeah, it isn't cheap to go to one of these trade shows, you know. Like a stand here at our small trade show is like, I think $4,000 or $5,000, you know, isn't cheap.
Mm. I thought you meant like travel.
Travel just, as well, you know, that often costs more.
I don't know what the hell's going on in San Francisco that week that I'm supposed to be out there, but I paid a lot more than normal for getting out there. So,
yes, they will up their rates. They will know that there's a conference on and the local hotels will up their rates. Yep, that's an old school trick. Yep.
Yep, totally.
Yep. Bastards. So the key to doing that is to book like 6 months out, like you know it's going to be on or something. Now, as soon as the date comes out, you know, then you book, boom.
Yep.
So anyway, good luck.
Thanks. All right. I'll be hopefully doing a meetup out there too. There's also hardware.io is happening, I think, around that same time. And I talked to past guests, Joe Grand, I think he's going to be out there, and RSA is also that week up in San Francisco, which is why I think it's so expensive, but I will be down in Mountain View at the Computer History Museum, actually. I don't know if we mentioned that.
Oh, excellent. Yes, I think you did.
I think we started to talk about that, and I edited it out because I didn't think it had been announced yet,
right?
But that's where the Zephyr thing will be.
Right.
And I've never been there, so you've been. I'm excited to check it out, hopefully.
Yep, I'd love to go there again because they got more better stuff now.
History keeps happening. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
We're making history right now, Dave.
Right now. Yes. They'll be playing the amp hour at the local museum.
Can you imagine
museum?
If I just snuck in like a tiny Bluetooth speaker that was just playing the amp hour with like a sticker on it.
Right.
A little plaque that I just like, you know, like
Oh boy.
I don't think that's gonna fly, but you know, you never know.
Yeah, I reckon you could blast it out from the trade show stand. Yep.
Oh, not the trade. No, I actually meant sneaking into the museum.
You can do it on the trade show stand.
You know, like you put it on like a Microsoft something or else. Yep. And
right. That's the equivalent of going to a modern art museum and just leaving something on the floor in the corner and a little sign there and people just gather around it. Ooh, like, you know.
Well, like the guy that there was like the piece of art that was like a banana with a piece of duct tape like to the wall.
Yes, a banana with a piece of duct
tape. And then the guy ate it and that was like performance art.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh, God.
We're just combining art and electronics. It's the art of electronics.
Okay, I'll pay that. Oh, boy. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, what's in non-trade show news? It's been a couple weeks since we've chatted. I guess we talked to Paul 2 weeks ago. So 3 weeks since we last chatted.
Well, there's some stuff on the list. Do we really want to talk about some of the stuff? You know, it involves Joe Biden, you know, the Defense Production Act for EV batteries. It's like,
That's okay. I actually wanted to talk about the Ant Micro board. So Ant Micro, we've had on the show before.
Yeah. Why has this got 18 thumbs up? What is this Ant Micro board?
So Ant Micro is so Michael Gild has been on the show twice before. Dave, I don't believe talked. Yeah. You didn't speak with him the other time.
No.
But Ant Micro does. So they're based out of Poland. They do a bunch of like contract work, but also very open source focused. I thought this was going to be something different at first. So the title is open source, Ant Micro releases open source hardware, Snapdragon 845 baseboard designed with KiCad. I didn't read it obviously because KiCad. It has baseboard.
Yep.
Because it has baseboard in the name. I'm going to ignore that. But I thought they were actually going to be putting a Snapdragon 845 and doing the layout with KiCad. And that is not the case. This is a module that you can buy from Quictel. So like these kind of off the shelf Android, it's like Android and on a board kind of thing. So instead of designing an entire cell phone, you basically buy the processor part of the cell phone and then you do all the breakouts. So like a very, very high powered Raspberry Pi CM4, you can buy these from Quictel as well.
Right.
They got a bunch of camera inputs and stuff like that. It's all just like, you know, high density connector. And then you do the pairs out to MIPI pairs out to the camera and stuff like that. So,
Got it.
So Ant Micro did the baseboard. I thought they did the whole board. I was really excited to see a layout in KiCad using, you know, like for like a 20 layer board to a thing, but that's still on the module. So, but still, very fancy board and you can glean a lot from this thing. So it's like a very nice, nicely laid out high density board, but
cool.
I was hoping to see the 845 because Snapdragon. So like Snapdragon, that's what's in a lot of modern mobile phones, right? So that's like, you know, many Android phones just are in this family and I've never really seen boards like that. So I don't even know. You've done high density stuff, probably not even at this level yet, but
yeah.
I don't know what it looks like.
All right. I haven't downloaded the files and opened it up, but it looks pretty dense.
Yeah.
But it's a shame it's just the baseboard.
Mm. Yeah. But maybe there will be something out there. I think it's like you gotta, sign your life away if you want to get like the actual like Quictel or not Qualcomm rather. It's like a Qualcomm part. So
I think they're lawyered up to the eyeballs, aren't they?
That's right. Yeah, right.
Great.
But if there's anyone out there that has an open source design that happens to have all the Qualcomm parts on it, I'd love to hear about it.
Cool bananas. All right. Well, you LinkedIn, you're just a Wendover Productions fanboy.
Oh, totally.
Every second week, you link in the latest Wendover Productions.
If you haven't watched it yet.
I haven't watched it.
If you haven't watched Wendover ever, you need to watch Wendover. I think it hits all like the stuff, like it's about trains and airplanes. So basically like they like talk to a little kid and they're like, what are all the toys that you like? And then I'm going to make videos about the logistics of the big kid versions, you know?
Yep. I know. They're very addictive videos to watch. Yep.
Yeah. No, this one's about corn. It kind of felt like the
corn. I like corn. Like normally someone asks you, would you like to watch a video on corn farming?
Corn.
Like, no, thanks. Okay. Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah.
But no, when you know it's a Wendover production, you know it's going to be absolutely fascinating. So
yeah, and I think just generally the ag tech sector in general too. Like, you know, so there's another video I linked in the comments there too of
ag tech.
Ag tech, agriculture technology.
Agricultural technology for those playing long at home. Yep. Yeah.
And I mean, I think it's just, it's a fascinating space because one, it's basically like if you took all of the guts, not even all of, probably even more extensive requirements from an industrial, you know, like inside a factory, maybe not like a, you know, steel processing plant or something, but, you know, it's got the same kind of things. It's got the same temp ranges you have to deal with. Mm. It's got the same static discharge you have to deal with. Like, basically, it is the industrial sector, but it's out in nature.
Yeah.
And right. So all the electronics kind of have to deal with the same things. And it's just a really interesting solution space. Mm. It's also it's a pretty closed off solution space because there's such big players and there's such big money in it.
Oh, yes. Yep.
So, you know, I've seen some startups in that area and it's been interesting kind of seeing how they try and play there. They're also selling to like extremely skeptical people, also known as farmers. Right. So right. Like, you know, so like things that like I don't ever really think about, but like the, you know, just the margin, you know, if you're trying to sell a piece of technology to a farmer and they're like on super razor thin margins, it has to like work perfectly every single time. And it, you know, it can't be that expensive and it has to be like so elegant and simple that it's like, okay, it just does its thing without you even thinking about it. So I don't know. It's interesting. And then there is the super high end as well. Right. So like these guys are driving, you know, sometimes $1 million pieces of equipment as well. Like the John Deere stuff and all of these,
which you
like,
can't fix, of course.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But like, that's big, big money. Right. And like really big tech in there too. And like, I don't know, it's just a really interesting solution space. And also like you're in the middle of the field. So it's like often you can't get cellular. So you might have to go satellite or you might have to, you know.
Oh yeah. They have their own local networks and stuff like that. If you want to get fancy and they'll like, and they're, aren't they like planting crops with like drones now, you know, they got these, you know, quadcopters that fly around and they can, you know.
Yeah. I think it is possible to do that. I think it's, you know, that's not the,
no, it's not the
majority. Yeah,
it's not the majority. But if you've got some niche thing, maybe it's, you know, that works for you. You know, that's your thing. So yeah.
No, it's just an interesting space. Destin from Smarter Every Day also has one. I also linked that one. I'll link that in here too as well. That's just about green silos.
Oh yes, I've seen that one. Yeah, that's absolutely fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. So good stuff. I mean, it's very niche, but. But it's really important, right? This stuff falls over and we're all starving within a couple weeks. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. All right.
All right.
What else have we got? Come on.
Australia warns of a critical shortage of engineers.
Did that make the list? Oh, yes, it did. Way back.
It did?
Yes, I originally posted this when it came out. And... yeah, great. Thanks.
What do you think about this, Dave? I mean, going back to the manufacturing thing that you're talking about, if there was a surge in manufacturing, like that would become a limiting factor, right? Because
that's
scale your local workforce, then that's like, okay, well, unless you're willing to then, you know, open up visas and, you know, bring in external talent, then it's like, what else are you going to do? There's only so far that automation goes, you know, and even when you have automation in the form of a pick and place machine, somebody's got to run it.
Exactly. So, but when you're talking about engineers, right, when you get a headline like this, Australia warns of a critical shortage of engineers, right?
Yeah.
A, it's not the first time. And, B, it's like, what type of engineers? Us lowly ranked electronics engineers, we're probably the least type of engineer. Who would be the least type of engineer?
I'm not making that call,
that Joe think about. Because you talk about engineer, you talk about someone who builds bridges, who builds buildings, who builds roads, you know, a civil engineer.
In my experience, it's usually depends on the person you're talking to, right?
Oh, no, of course. Like, but I'm talking Joe Average. Come on, Joe Average.
I know, but is Joe Average like in construction? Then he's going to be like, oh yeah, civil engineer.
No, come on.
You know, like, I don't know. That's what I mean. I think like it's based on their personal context, but.
I guess, okay. But
Joe Average. I'd say
it's true. When I tell people I'm an engineer, I get some people ask me what type, you know, and then they'll tell me, you know, they'll simply say, oh, is that a civil engineer or is that electronics engineer? People actually know.
I stopped actually saying I'm an engineer. Did you know that? I don't know if I told you that. When you introduce yourself, you say engineer first.
Yeah.
I tell people specifically, try this next time. Say, I design electronics.
Yes,
I think that is the most succinct way. And then be immediately follow up with, they're going to say, what kind of electronics? And I say, industrial electronics, because that's basically then they know that I'm not designing their cell phone or their TV anything else like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so that's I design electronics. Yeah. It's industrial electronics. Sometimes it connects to the internet. And like, okay, cool. And then they stop talking.
And then end of story. They don't hassle you anymore. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Rather than ask you if you can fix their iPhone.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to. Yeah. I don't want to get there. So exactly. I think that's a succinct way to say that what I do. Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of that, segues nicely into one of the reasons. Well, not one of the reasons, but one of the ironic things about this. Australia warns of critical shortage of engineers, because you mentioned you don't call yourself an engineer, right?
Mm. Sure.
The government officially. Well, in the state of Victoria, it's coming to New South Wales. I think it might be coming to Queensland, like the different states.
This is old news.
Here,
we've talked about this for...
Yeah, no, this is old news, right? Yeah, in Victoria, it's official. Yeah, you cannot call yourself an engineer anymore, right?
No, no, so it's been official in Victoria for years, I thought. I remember talking about this on the show a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Yes, no, we did talk about it on the show, yes.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying the irony of it. Right? Oh, we've got a shortage of engineers, but then they introduce legislation to say, oh, you're not allowed to call yourself an engineer.
Oh, right? I see.
Mm. Even though you design electronics, as you say, right? Oh, no, you're not allowed to call yourself an engineer, though, right?
Oh,
critical
shot.
So anyway, I just think that's irony overload.
If I'm going to change my mind, I'll call myself an engineer. I don't care about that.
Right? No, I just think it's irony overload, right?
Oh, I see. Yeah.
That, shortage of engineers, and that you introduce legislation to, you know, make it a hurdle to get into the engineering industry, or to even, you know, you've been working in it your whole life and you can't call yourself an engineer anymore because you refuse to pay the dues to the freaking Engineers Australia, right?
Yep.
No, yep. Screw you. Yep. It's like, you know. Yep. Anyway, so I looked into the numbers for this, right?
Okay.
Because I thought, oh, well, you know, usually to solve this problem, oh, we'll just import them, right?
Sure.
Usually from India.
That is a solution,
And this is EEV blog said this, right? Because she works at a government agency. She works with a lot of engineers, right? We're talking like civil, you know, type, you know, engineers here, right? And she says all of them are Indian, almost all of them are like they import engineers from India because there's just not enough here, right? Yeah. They can't get enough graduates who want to work in that sort of field, right? So they import them from India. And I actually looked at the numbers, right? And India produces, can't remember that, 1.5 million graduate engineers per year.
Yep.
That's five times more than we have engineers total in this country.
Yep.
And they produce that many every, five times more than we have total every year.
Oh, yeah. So it's a different game. Yeah. I mean, it's China as well. And like,
I don't know about China because it's hard.
China, they've said a million. I remember the number.
Level education there, isn't it?
No.
Or something, but
no.
India, it's like you're expected to get an engineering degree. It's like that's like base level, you know. It's like,
I think it's great. Like, I'm very pro immigration overall. I think that's awesome. Especially like, I think if you know if you need the help, right? Why not? You know.
Well, you've got no choice. Right?
Yeah, right,
but
exactly.
Anyway.
Well, no, your choice is to slow everything down and say like, oh, we're going to do less expansion, less whatever. So that's, I think, the choice.
Anyway, they have a plan, and we can link in the report. They've got a plan, securing the future of Australia's engineering workforce.
Mm.
And they've got a, you know, they've set up a committee, the Go 8 committee, the Group of Eight. The Group of Eight committee, which is various universities who've got together, and I don't know, they've got some, you know, 50-page plan or something.
You know what would be interesting is they never talk about it. Like, they always say like, oh, well, we're going to like invest more in education and stuff like that. But like, they never talk about like, well, let's do a parental education campaign. Like, here's why you might want your child to be an engineer, right? Yeah, or not, whatever. But like, I never hear that like proposed as a thing. You know, like, let's do a PR campaign about you know, where engineers are valuable in society, that sort of thing. It's just like, it's always very focused on the educational piece, which is ultimately like the gating thing, I think, especially if it's you know, accreditation based or whatever, if it, you know, in certain areas like civil where there's with certification and requirements like that, fine, whatever. But like, you still don't ever usually hear about kind of the PR aspect of it. The best they've got for PR, Dave, you know what the best PR is?
What?
It's us. Sorry, man.
Us. Right. Yeah.
We're not helping, you know?
I'm sure the parents are listening to our podcast. Yeah, we need to play it in schools. It needs to be compulsory.
Yeah. Right? Oh, yeah. There's anyway, our growth market.
I just searched the plan document for the word parent, and it's not in there. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly. No. See? No. Yeah. Well, yeah. good luck to them. I hope they
obviously need to hire us to
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's just more Aussie engineers. One of my favorite engineers is an Aussie.
Thank you very much.
Oh, it's not you.
Oh, no, damn. But yeah, anyway, I just think it's those just numbers are staggering. The sheer numbers of compared to different countries are just unbelievable. Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah. So, yeah, anyway, we'll link that in down below if you've got whiz-bang ideas how to do this. But, like, as I said, it's not the first time. Like, it's happened before, and, yeah, they just keeps on happening. Critical shortage of engineers. But, it could be tied into that, like, stuff is coming back here, you know, manufacturing. But, you know, they're really talking about, like, construction, really. Like, that's the big thing they're talking about. You know, we need to construct more bloody houses so that they can go up, you know, 100 times in value. And, you know,
in Australia.
Yeah, we need to build more, you know, 50-story apartment blocks, you know, so that people can live in little cubicles, you know.
Glass and
metal.
Yeah,
stuff like that. So it's, you know, electronics. Nope, the word electronics does not appear in this document once.
Oh, boy. All right.
How about electrical? I'll settle for electrical.
Yeah.
No. Nope. Nothing. The word electrical does not appear in here once. Mm. But,
But does civil? I mean, like, does...
Yep. Civil appears. Yep.
Civil's all over. Great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, it's about building stuff. You know, I don't think they even care about electronics, do they? Please think of the electronics engineers.
I don't know how to code.
Oh boy.
I shouldn't have passed statics. I don't know why bridges stand up. Oh man.
Yeah. Oh boy.
A friend bought my daughter a ABCs of engineering book, and it's fantastic. You know, it's like A is for ampere and
M is for multi-ampere. Right.
It's really a great book.
Right. That's cool.
And there's one for like, I think F is for force, and it's got like a suspension bridge. And I'm just like looking at it, telling my daughter, I'm like, I actually don't know how this works.
I don't know how this works. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I know gravity is down and there's some arrows in the other direction.
Yeah. There's a vector going down this way and there's vectory vectors, things going this way. And I don't know. Yeah. Just use your finger and point around and God, we're hopeless, aren't we? Us poor electronics engineers. No wonder we don't get the recognition.
That's right.
We don't deserve.
No respect.
Because, you know, everything, you know, all the electronic gadgets you have, they just magically come out of China, right? That's just, you know.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Anyway. Last news, which has been in here for a while, I guess. Mercedes will accept full, we've talked about this on before, which is the autopilot driving thing. Mercedes will now accept full legal responsibility for the vehicle when a driver pilot is active. That's a big step.
That is
that,
a big step.
That really puts skin in the game.
I was going to say, that's putting your money, literal money where your mouth is, or your money where your coat is.
that's a big deal. So I don't know anything about the Mercedes.
Maybe they're basing it on the idea that, no one can afford a Mercedes with autopilot on it, you know?
Oh, right. Well, I don't know what drive pilot is. Like, is it equivalent to the Tesla one? Is it like a smart cruise control thing? Right.
It's
not full autonomous driving, right?
You're right. I think it's more like that.
Right. Is that a camera-only system, or has that got like LiDARs and stuff?
It doesn't look like it from the photos, but, you know.
Yeah, but they could be hidden away somewhere. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's a big debate. Oh, didn't that come out did I see a tweet yesterday or something that Toyota have decided to go with Tesla's camera only system. That's a big deal. But there's a lot of people that are going, the camera only system is, it's going to come a gutter. It's not going to be that good.
Yeah, I've heard both. I've heard both sides of that. I've heard people saying like, well, the LiDAR is just not reliable enough. And, you know, everything's moving to camera because of the costs and fewer moving parts and stuff like that. But I don't know.
Well, people always go back to the fallback argument is that oh, humans just have eyeballs and that's it, right? Humans just have two cameras and that's it,
that's
right?
True.
Sure, right. You know, so therefore,
pretty good fidelity,
you know, if our AI is smart enough, literally two cameras should be enough, right? And it's like, no. They're overestimating the ability of AI and software and everything else and edge cases and, no, it's just, like I said, 20 plus years away, it's still not going to be there, you know? It's not.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. Nope. We'll see.
I said that 10 years ago. I said 10 years ago, and I'm still saying 20 years. It's like fusion,
Yeah.
Fusion. Within our lifetimes.
I have a friend working at a fusion company. I have a friend working at a fusion company.
Excellent.
I've maybe made that joke.
Oh, right. Okay. You've made the
30 years away joke.
What's it? 30 years away joke. There was, somebody did an excellent YouTube video, which keeps popping up, even though I've already bloody watched it, about he works in the fusion industry and he did this video, why fusion is not going to be a thing. So maybe we should, try and get him
on
the
show. My sci-fi books have something to say about that, Dave.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah.
How are we going to get
this? Everyone's talking about gravity drives now, you know, gravity drives. We can make, like, if you can warp the gravity in front of a spaceship, you can just,
sounds easy.
Yeah. So we have top men working on it right now.
Top men.
Who? Top men. Yes. Oh, boy. Anyway, our amp hour's almost up. We've got a minute left. If you've got a last minute thing.
I have something. It's kind of worky, but I've been working on
worky?
Thread stuff.
What's worky?
Yeah, worky. Worky. Like
work in progress.
I'm doing it. No, I'm doing it at work. That's the thing. So.
Oh, right. Okay.
Thread. It's a cool thing. I had not seen it before. It's
thread.
Basically, it's like it allows Bluetooth sensors, effectively Bluetooth sensors like the NRF52840, to have an IP address. So you can actually like have it talk to the internet. I had not seen that before. Obviously, it's not new at all. None of this stuff is new. I don't do anything new.
Right.
But having an IP address on like super, super tiny things, I'm very excited about. So hoping to make some tiny little sensors that can talk to the internet. Without,
this is IPv6, obviously, because haven't we run completely out of V4s or something?
Yeah, I think V4s are pretty solidly kaput. Yep. But it's cool stuff. So I'll let you know if I figure out more about it. But it's
cool
great.
Bananas.
I like it. Yeah.
Well, it just went over the 1 hour mark. I saw it just tick over. Not including the intro, but where we go.
Oh, well, my timer has a minute 40 left. Yeah, that's the thing. I think the intro. So we actually beat the clock by a minute and a half. So if you have anything you'd like to say, Dave,
Should we just leave early because we can?
Oh, leave early. Yeah, I guess we're the boss. So
yeah, bugger it.
We're in charge here. See ya.
Catch you next time.